Muto ahead 0-2. Ground ball, Lindor to his left. Gets there. Throws on the run. Got him! Side retired. Lindor covering enormous chunks of ground to throw on Espinal. And Muto puts up a...
Carlos, obviously with Lindor, big part of his workload is the fact that he does play defense. He not only plays defense, plays shortstop. There's a big debate going on right now between, you know, Ohtani and Lindor, Ohtani being a full-time DH. Just, we try to quantify defensive metrics and all that, but how valuable, frankly, is Lindor playing shortstop and comparing to someone who doesn't play defense?
Not only he plays defense, he plays an elite defense, you know, and he makes the guys around him so much better. You can make a case that Vientos at third base, Beatty early in the year, McNeil, and, you know, the improvement, Iglesias, and there's a lot. And just being kind of like the quarterback of the infield, leading the way, and just, you know, staying on everybody, playing the game the right way with the scoreboard, throwing the ball to the right base, you know, not making a throw when there's not a play. So not only we've seen that with him when he's got to make the routine plays, when he has to make the difficult plays, but just the conversations, in the dugout, in between innings, during our meetings, when we're doing our scouting report, our advance, like, there's a lot that this guy brings to the table, not only on the field, but off the field. So pretty impressive.
All right, we're back. So the debate has been Francisco Lindor is the MVP, and we've been, you know, talking about that and what have you. And I think that that's a much more complicated conversation. I think it'll be interesting. I think Lindor, and I said this, and maybe I'm repeating myself. I was talking about this offline, but I may have said this on Subway to Shea on the show last week. But I think a couple of things have to happen for Lindor to seriously overtake Ohtani for the MVP, because it's likely he's going to get 50 home runs and 50 steals, which is historic. And he's got that star factor, the big free agent, LA. I always feel the Dodgers are going to get the bounce of the writers over the Mets. It happened as far back as 1988 with Kurt Gibson against Strawberry and McReynolds and all that stuff. I'm not going to get into that again. We've talked about that, and you've probably heard about that a billion times over the course of your lifetime if you're old enough to remember that. And Lindor will have to do the following. The Mets will have to make the playoffs, number one. That is a prerequisite. The Mets do not make the playoffs. I don't care how good Lindor's stats are. He will not be the MVP and probably shouldn't be. I mean, even though baseball is more than one player, it's not the NFL, it's not the NBA. But that's part of the winning formula, in my opinion. Or else then it's an offensive award. It's not even a defensive award, it's an offensive award. It's a silver slugger type of award. MVP is a blend of winning, offense, and defense. Now, he has the advantage defensively over Ohtani, but I think Ohtani and what he's doing historically on the offensive side and his position in LA, I think they're going to kind of overlook the lack of a position. If he was pitching and pitching at an elite level, this wouldn't be a contest. You know what I know. Let's be fair here. Now, so the Mets have to make the playoffs. Lindor already has played gold. I mean, you saw it this weekend. Tremendous defense. Gold glove level defense. And he's got to continue to hit. Now, he seems to be maybe cooling down a little bit. He got a little long today, swung at a couple of pitches out of the strike zone. I thought his last at bat, I thought he drove one. I thought he might have gotten it, but it was right at the left fielder. And died out there in the outfield. But anyway, those are the things that have to happen. He has to stay hot. The Mets have to make the playoffs. And maybe at that point, he has a shot at winning over the voters. It's as simple as that. And I see everybody talking about Lindor with his clutch numbers versus Ohtani, the value of him with his fielding versus Ohtani. You could dive into these numbers, and I'm sure we will when the season's over, one way or the other. And I'm sure the conversation will happen. But it's going to come down to, you know, we talked about vibes and emotion in the opening. We talked about that. It's going to come down to Lindor being that much better than Ohtani. He has to be. He has to be. Now, I don't know exactly when they're going to take the vote, so the postseason shouldn't matter. And in reality, I've always thought an MVP, you have to delineate the awards. An MVP should probably take into account a postseason. Now, if 88, you wanted to put postseason into it, Gibson is the MVP over Strawberry, over Mick Reynolds. No doubt. Now, that wasn't when the vote happened. They had no idea Gibson was going to hit a dramatic walk-off on one leg. But he was, and it all worked out in the end. But those his numbers were far and less than those two. And I guess a lot of the writers back then said, you take Gibson off the Dodgers, they don't make the playoffs. You take Strawberry McReynolds off the Mets, they may still make the playoffs. I could debate that, too. So you're really going to have to get some anecdotal checks in the column for Lindor with winning, with recency bias, with him hitting at the end of the year, maybe making a big play against the Braves down the stretch or the Phillies or the final week of the season. Because if that happens, if the writers see that and that sticks in their memory, and maybe the Dodgers make the postseason, but Ohtani doesn't hit as well down the stretch. Let's say he doesn't hit 50-50. Does that change things? I don't think so, necessarily. I think it makes things closer. But I think Lindor has to do those things. And if the Mets don't make the postseason, even if Lindor does those things, I don't think he gets the MVP. I think it's as simple as that. Lindor has to be that much better. He has to overcome the fact that Ohtani's a star, an international star, the LA factor, the anti-New York bias. There's also that little anti-Cohen bias that people say they don't have. It's there in the back of their head. Remember, you know, LOL Mets is easier to write about than MVP Lindor Mets making the playoffs. Remember that, because then that normalizes them into what being like everybody else, the Dodgers, the Braves, the Yankees, you know, whatever. So that's where I feel we're at. I'm going to stand by that. I'm not really going to get much more into that until after the season. We'll see where that stands. And look, Lindor, especially on the defensive side, I think he made a couple of plays. I mean, on this homestand, he made about two or three plays I could think of that probably if he didn't make them, innings could have been different and outcomes of the game could have been different. He's had as good of a season at shortstop as there's been in Mets history on the defensive side. And I'll start there because the talk has been about where this season stands in Mets history. And I like these conversations. And even though we're in the midst of a pennant race here, I think we kind of know when it's go time what needs to be done. We know where the Mets are. There's not much to talk about here. It's about getting the job done and executing. And they took, look, they took a big hit with McNeil and the injury. We'll get to that on the way out. But the Mets are in a really good position, even without one of their core hitters, to get this thing done. So as far as the shortstop position, the Mets have historically, it's not a very long list of star shortstops that are elite. They've had some really good shortstops. You know, Rafael Santana was a solid shortstop. Even for a brief time when he was here, Ahmed Rosario was a solid shortstop. Buddy Harrelson was a great glove shortstop. He was your typical 1960s, 1970s shortstop. Good glove. That's all you wanted out of them. Good glove. Good range. Made the plays. Maybe not even flashy. And, you know, that's pretty much what the Mets had, even with a Kevin Elster. Elster was supposed to hit a little bit more than he did. He never developed into that. Elster was a steady shortstop, made the plays. At one point had the record for errorless streak at the position and was smooth at that position. And, you know, Ray Ordonez, I think, with his flashiness and his elite athleticism, was kind of the next generation of shortstops, the modern shortstop. Now, at that time, you had Garcia Parra and A-Rod and Jeter. So he wasn't in that class. Miguel Tejada a little later on. He wasn't in that class offensively, but he was as good and probably the best defensive shortstop in the game over a four-year period. The only knock you can make on Ordonez is he got to so many balls and he wouldn't eat them because he had a great arm that he would, you know, make some errors. And he got better at that as his career went on. If I had to put them next to each other, I think Lindor is a combination of elite and steady versus Ordonez with athleticism and arm. I mean, Ordonez's arm is way better than Lindor's. There's no doubt about it. But when you compare the brew here of offense and defense in Mets history and seasons, now what's interesting, and I'm kind of crossing over between two sites here, FanGraphs and Baseball Reference. I'm just doing it because this is what I have in front of me and I really don't care. It's my show. I'll do what I want. You want to write me and say, Mike, you're dope. You could write me and say you're dope and here's what I have. And that's what the whole fun thing is. But I didn't realize FanGraphs, as of today, on September 8th, 2024, Jose Reyes is third all-time in win shares in Mets history behind David Wright and Darryl Strawberry. I mean, David Wright is by far the best position player in Mets history. And he would have been even better, and he would have been a Hall of Famer in the mold of an Eddie Matthews and a Chipper Jones if he didn't get hurt. I think we've talked about that. We talked about that during the Hall of Fame show. So you got Strawberry. I mean, Reyes is a tick below Strawberry, which is interesting because Reyes had a combination of speed, fielding, and bat. I mean, he's a little bit better than Beltran, and Beltran probably would have been better if he didn't get hurt. I mean, really, in my lifetime, I think the best overall position player in Mets history was Beltran. I think he was better than Wright. I think he was an elite center fielder on defense. He was an elite hitter. He had a good arm. I mean, he did everything. And he played a more premium position than Wright. So I would give it to Beltran, but I know the injury knocked him out a little bit. So off the bat, Lindor has been there 21, 22, 23. This is his fourth season in a Mets uniform. He did not get off to a good start in 21. He had an awful first 2 months this year. Even with all that, he is ninth in four seasons. He is ninth all-time in win shares in Mets history. He very likely, by this time next year, will pass Keith Hernandez and maybe Mike Piazza. And he potentially, in a year and a half, will be right there with Edgardo Alfonso and Carlos Beltran. At this time, 2 years from now, we'll be talking about Lindor being a top five player in Mets history. Assuming he stays healthy, assuming the bat doesn't turn to dust, assuming that he doesn't start to decline. I don't think the decline on defense is here. We'll see as we get towards the end of the contract. So with all the debate about the money, with all the debate about how good is he worth $35, $36 million a year? With all of that, while we've been talking about that, while we've been criticizing that, while we've been gnashing our teeth about the Mets not producing down the stretch in 2022, about his failures in 2021, about the awful 2023 season, all of that, Lindor quietly has become a top player in franchise history in just a short span of time with some significant valleys in his first season and this year, which is amazing. Now, as far as shortstop, he's going to pass the 2023 version of himself within the next couple of weeks, maybe by this week. I think he's 1/10 of a win share off his last year pace. He's probably going to be good, depending on how the rest of the season plays out, you know, for about 6.5 wins. Maybe he'll hit the 7 win share. I don't know if he's going to have a full win share in the next 3 weeks. We'll see. Maybe. We'll see. So that's better than 06 Reyes. That's better than 07 Reyes. That's better than 08 Reyes. That's better than probably the best version of Reyes, which was the year he became a free agent and won the batting title in 2011. And after that, you know, you have a collection of good fielding, okay to not okay hitting shortstops in Mets history. I mean, that's as simple as that. And in a lot of ways, when you had Tejada, you know, when Reyes left, you had Tejada and Wilmer Flores and Astrubal Cabrera for a period. You went a period between 2021, about 10 years, a decade, where the Mets really didn't have, it was like a revolving door of shortstop. They didn't have a shortstop. You had Omar Quintanilla manning the position. Think about that. Premium position. He was a nice component, like backup player, but he wasn't a guy that you wanted to have as a starting shortstop on a team that was winning anything. And I love Wilmer Flores. I love Wilmer Flores' bat. I love what he did in 2015. I think it's utterly amazing that the Mets won with that up-the-middle defense with Flores and Daniel Murphy up the middle. Amazing to me. Amazing that they won. I mean, Flores' arm action alone was there are plays that Lindor makes in his sleep that Flores couldn't dream of making. Let's put it that way. So it's kind of amazing. That's not a knock on Flores. Shortstop is a tough position. Now that we got that out of the way, where does this stand in Mets history? And I popped up my baseball reference spreadsheet that I've had sitting on my computer probably. You know, I always go through this stuff, especially in the off season when there's nothing to talk about. So the top 5 seasons, and Lindor's, you know, stats have been updated through yesterday on this. David Wright 07, Carlos Beltran 06, you know, Wright's a skush in 07 better. Bernard Gilkey in 96, Olerud in 98, Lance Johnson in 96, and then a Wright 2012, a Cleon Jones 69, which is, I was surprised to see it, a Beltran 08, and then you got Gary Carter in 85 and Howard Johnson in 89. Those are the top 10 seasons in Mets history. Right now, Francisco Lindor is on the outside looking in. Now, it's possible that by the end of the year, depending on how Baseball Reference does this brew here, that Lindor will get into the top 10 in Mets history, maybe with a 7-win season for Baseball Reference, doing something similar to what you saw at a Carter in 85, Hojo in 89, Cleon Jones, a right. He will not hit, unless there's something crazy that happens. I mean, utterly crazy. The right Beltran level. Now, for me, I wasn't around for 69. I was too young for 85. I remember Hojo in 89. But I was very intimately watching a Gilkey, a Lance Johnson, a Carlos Beltran, a right. The 96 guys and that team with the three offensive players, Hundley, Gilkey, Johnson, had a, I mean, if they had any kind of pitching, that team would have been fun. I mean, they were all predicated on Generation K, which fizzled out. I can't take those seasons into account because as much because they weren't for winning baseball team. The right 07, I mean, he really carried the Mets down the stretch when things were going to hell in a handbag. And by the way, Moises Alou, too, had a big September that year. Offense was not that team's problem. It was pitching and bullpen. Sound familiar? Even with that, to me, the most complete, from start to finish, season, an impact was Carlos Beltran in 06. And Carlos was starting to have knee problems. I remember early in the year, he had to take some time off. I don't know if he went on the injured list, but he had to take some time off because the knee was barking. The knee injuries that plagued him later in his Mets career were starting to rear itself. And I think that version of Beltran, which only stole 18 bases, because when he was acquired by the Mets as a free agent, the stolen base was still part of his repertoire. I think if he was a healthier version, a younger version of Beltran, he very well could have been a 40-40 guy. Very well been a 40-40 guy. There's no doubt in my mind he could have done that. Because that was always the thing that I found interesting about Beltran when he came over, and we found out a couple of years later as the knee got worse, is why did he stop stealing bases? Because earlier in his career, you know, he was stealing about 35-40 bases. The year before, he stole 42 bases playing for the Royals and the Astros. And that's combined. So you thought you were getting a 30-30 guy. And with the Mets, he creeped into the 20s a little bit, but never like he did in his younger years in Kansas City. So, to me, that's the best season in history. Elite Gold Glove defense at a premium position, center field. A bat, he has more pure power, and he's a switch hitter, like Lindor. Run production, 116 ribeye stakes, almost a 1-to-1 walk-to-strikeout ratio. There is nothing Lindor can do this year that I believe will put him at the apex of where Beltran is. I don't care what WAR says right now, because it's a really... Even with WAR, the win shares, it's a crapshoot. To me, the best season, the best individual position player season in Mets history is 2006 Carlos Beltran. It's better than any Strawberry season, better than any Wright season, better than any Reyes season. I loved John Olerud. I mean, John Olerud, that loss of John Olerud, I think, was huge. And Zeal did okay in 2000. I think if John Olerud's on the Mets in 2000, it's hard to say they would. You know, Benitez still has to make the final, has to make the final save. But I think that offense is better in 2000. And Olerud ran out having a couple of good years in Seattle and was part of that historic team in 2001 in Seattle. Loved Olerud's game, line drive hitter, power, solid defensively. One of my favorite Mets in the 90s. He and Piazza and Fonzie, that triumvirate. And a lot of people forget the 98 Olerud, which is up there. Olerud and Piazza were very similar that season with that offense, with that team, before they imported Ventura, before Ricky Henderson came over, before they got Benny Agbayani and Roger Cedeno and Darrell Hamilton, and they were able to build that offense. And Fonzie was able to join them the next year to be an elite hitter. And Fonzie was good in 97 and 98. He was not as much power. He was good. But Olerud and Piazza that year were kind of like Soto and Judge light for that team because that was the offense. Those are the guys that you needed to be on to carry you. And down the stretch, I mean, he went like 13 consecutive plate appearances getting on base. I mean, Olerud was huge. And if not for Larry Walker having a crazy year out of Colorado, he probably wins the batting title. So, you know, but he plays first base. He played a very good first base. He plays first base. So I will say this, though. And I don't care what WAR says, what win shares say. Depending on how he lands, let's say he lands even at like a 6.5 win share here, and he's in the Gary Carter, Hojo, maybe, you know, Strawberry 87 type of season. an underrated season too. Strawberry was big in 87 for the Mets. I would have to say for me, as far as impactful, this season, from an anecdotal standpoint, is up there with Wright, is up there with Beltran, but it's the next stage down. I'd put it better than Gilkey and Lance Johnson because of the premium position and the team and everything. I would put it maybe better than Olerud in 98, even if it's not statistically right there. And I can't speak about Cleon Jones, but it's amazing. The two things that stand out to me when you break down this list is Keith Hernandez. Well, three things. Keith Hernandez, 84, when he came over, it was a great season, but how far down? He was a first baseman, he is on the list. Cleon Jones, how good his 69 was, because it's often not talked about. 69 and Cleon Jones is talked more about, and I've had Cleon on the show, and I should have kind of went through this one. I can't remember. It's been so many, a couple of years. I don't know if it was 21 or 22, but I had Cleon on the show. And, you know, it's so many years later, how good that season, his on-base percentage, his you know, everybody talks, because he didn't have power, Cleon, but everyone talks about him being walked off the field in that doubleheader late in the year by Gil Hodges, and almost Cleon is looked at in a negative fashion because of some off-the-field stuff, which really is ridiculous. It was probably part of the time and a lot of the negative social things that were going on during that time. But that standing out, I didn't realize how good Cleon Jones, 69, was. I knew Carter had a great 85. You know, that was a big part of the Mets, you know, final piece. And Gary really wasn't as good after, you know, middle of 86 on. He was starting to decline as a catcher. So that is where, you know, I start to look at that and I say, wow, those are seasons that stand out. But for me, you know, I'm going to be biased. I think this Lindor season is going to be right up there. It really is. Now, for those who watch 69, for those who were maybe a little bit older than me that could appreciate 85, I mean, I started watching baseball more intent at 87, 88. I wasn't old enough when I was 7 or 8 years old to appreciate the early parts of the 80s run. And even to the later parts, I was still developing my baseball chops. You're a young kid. You're 10, 11, 12 years old. I mean, you're learning. You're learning the world. You know, forget about baseball. You're learning the world. So, and I think how far down Strawberry is, because Strawberry's a great Met, and 87 was a great year, but Strawberry, you would think a Strawberry season would be on the top. It's not. Now, we're not going to go and do this now, but the Mets have always been known for pitching. But if you look at the Mets prior to 1985 when Carter came over, I mean, all of these seasons, the first 20-something years in Mets history, there's not a lot of offensive greatness up and down. Yeah, you got Cleon Jones, you got Tommy Agee, but you take away the Cleon Jones 69 season, you do pre-1985, the next best season is 1970 Tommy Agee, which is similar to an Angel Pagan season in 2010. And there's nothing wrong. Angel Pagan was really good in 2010. Really good. You know, John Stearns, 1978, the Mets really weren't known for offense. It's just something that just came out over here. But, you know, really, in short, this is going to be a good season by Lindor. I think the more that we watch him, the more this whole conversation about the contract could get put aside. It'll be really interesting because the fun is just beginning. I think we, no matter what happens this year, I think the Mets have a better foundation than we thought. I think Stearns has shown that he has the ability to adapt and build a roster and kind of evolve as the season goes on. I mean, I think it's, and I mean, it's not just Stearns. I mean, he's got people working for him. But the fact that they were able to pluck, and I don't think it's just luck, pluck a guy like Danny Young, you know, an Iglesias, you know, guys like that, you know, find Maton and grab him from the Rays at the right time. I know he lost the game today, but he's still been really good. How they've been able to navigate a season where they really, outside of Lindor's run since Memorial Day, they haven't had consistency from really anybody. Any of the guys they counted on, McNeil and Alonso, you know, Nimmo's been probably the most, I would say Nimmo's season is maybe more disappointing than Alonso's in some way. It's just amazing where the Mets are at. And, it's fun that we're talking about Lindor like this. It's fun that here we are on September 8th compared to a year ago after the Mets had done the fire sale. And all we were talking about is who's going to be running the team next year and who's going to be, you know, and then Buck gets fired. I mean, all the negativity that surrounded the team just a year ago, how it's done a complete 180. And look, there's a very thin difference between this team and 2022. This team has played a half a season at 100-win pace. That team started from the jump and didn't stop winning. I mean, that team didn't have an awful May like this team. Or else we'd be talking about a very, very similar team. And probably a team that's competing with the Phillies for a division, similar to how they competed, the 2022 version competed with the Braves for the division. So, all right, let's take a quick break. Final segment coming up. Jeff McNeil's out for the year. His season is over. It is a wild season for McNeil. This is a huge loss because I think the second half of McNeil, hopefully is the McNeil we'll see going into spring training next year. I know there's some talk I saw on X where fans are like, well, will he be back? I don't see why not. But what does this mean for the Mets? What kind of player is McNeil now? What kind of player can we expect McNeil to be going forward? We'll wrap up with Jeff McNeil right after this.